Iran dismisses as media war allegations that its military personnel are on the ground in Crimea to assist Russia in the Ukraine conflict. Israel carries out new airstrikes on Syria, wounding a soldier and causing material damage near capital Damascus. Also in the headlines, Rishi Sunak is declared the next leader of Britain's Conservative Party. He'll become the new Prime Minister. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behzad Rezaei. Good to have you with us. Now, Tehran strongly rejects Washington's allegations that Iranian military personnel are on the ground in Crimea, calling it a, quote, media war against the Islamic Republic.
We strongly reject the U.S. allegations that Iranian military personnel are on the ground in Russian-occupied Crimea. This is a media war aiming to deviate the public opinion from the destructive role Washington and the West have in the Ukraine war by standing on one side of the conflict and heavily exporting weapons and equipment to Ukraine.
Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says Iran has repeatedly expressed support for an immediate end to the war in Ukraine through a political process. He said that the West supplying one of the warring sides with billions of dollars worth of arms is in no way helping end the conflict. The spokesman again denied allegations that Tehran has provided any side with weapons. The comments came in response to White House accusations that Iranian forces are assisting Russia in its operation in Ukraine. The United States and Britain, as well as the European Union, have already imposed sanctions on Iran, citing the pretext that it's supplying drones and other weapons to Russia. President Ebrahim Raisi says that Iran is determined to expand outlet relations with China based on mutual respect and interests. He made a comment and congratulatory message to his Chinese counterpart, Xi Jinping, upon his re-election as the General Secretary of the ruling Communist Party. Raisi said cooperating within the framework of organizations and multilateral entities serves both countries' interests and helps preserve international peace and stability. On Sunday, 69-year-old Xi was confirmed as leader of China for a third term by the party's powerful Central Committee. Xi is expected to sail through another term as Chinese president, which is due to be announced during the government's annual legislative session in March. In Syria, air defenses have intercepted several Israeli missiles over the capital, Damascus. According to a military source, bursts of rockets hit areas near the capital city, injuring a soldier and causing some material damage. Our correspondent, Mohammed Ali, has more.
According to an official military source reported by Syrian state media, what happened according to that source was that Israel carried out strikes. Several missiles were launched by Israeli fighter jets flying over the northern parts of occupied Palestinian lands. Those missiles were intercepted by the Syrian, government. Syrian air defenses intercepted several missiles. However, it seems that some of those enemy missiles did reach their targets around the capital, Damascus, injuring one Syrian military personnel and causing some material damages. Now, this strike today comes just several days following a similar one that also hit parts of Damascus countryside. This is definitely not a surprise for the Syrian government. However, Israel continues to carry out such attacks, undermining Syria's sovereignty. Those attacks are, of course, against international law. They violate the UN Charter, yet international silence remains over such attacks.
Newly elected leader of Britain's ruling Conservative Party, Rishi Sunak, warning that his country has been facing profound economic challenges.
There is no doubt we face a profound economic challenge. We now need stability and unity.
On a brief live statement after winning his party's leadership race, Sunak also promised to bring unity at a time of economic crisis. 42-year-old Sunak is set to become the UK's third prime minister in less than 2 months. His predecessor, Liz Truss, resigned after a tumultuous 6 weeks into her job that included financial market chaos over her controversial tax slashing plans. Before her, Johnson quit following a turn to resignations over his scandalous tenure. London correspondent Robert Carter joined us a short while ago with the latest on the victory of Rishi Sunak in the Conservative Party leadership contest.
Rishi Sunak has experience as a former British Chancellor. He's seen as a safe pair of hands, economically speaking, particularly at a time when Britain is going through major economic crises, whether it be the cost of living crisis, the drop in the value of the pound, or simply fuel costs and things like that. Basically, Rishi Sunak is someone who has been criticised in the past. He's a multimillionaire. In fact, he's one of the wealthiest people in the UK, and has basically been criticised for his lack of friends in working class communities, referring to an interview he gave many years ago where he admitted to the fact that he comes from a privileged background. However, the markets have responded relatively well to the news that he's going to become the next British Prime Minister. And again, it's all based on this emphasis that Britain needs someone who knows how to manage the economy, someone who has experience in managing British finance policy, and can ultimately lead Britain through what's going to be a very difficult winter period. And so Rishi Sunak is definitely in a strong position. He's been proven right, and now he has his hands on the top job. But ultimately, the problems still persist within the Tory party over this concept of, can he bring the party together?
A new survey has found millions of households in Britain are skipping meals as they're struggling with the country's deepening cost of living crisis. The findings indicate inflation returning to a 40-year high after food prices soar. Saeed Puruza reports from London.
It's been just a few weeks since the now resigned Prime Minister, Liz Truss, promised low taxes and high growth. Events have moved incredibly fast in Westminster that a new finance minister is now raising taxes and promising public sector cuts. The U-turns and counter-U-turns have come with a cost for the economy and the people. A new study has found that millions of households are skipping meals or struggling to put healthy foods on the table. Inflation is already at more than 10%. Energy and fuel prices are on the rise, putting a squeeze on Britain's finances.
Well, the start of all this is Brexit. Brexit led to Boris and incompetence. It led to falling living standards. It led to Liz Truss and further incompetence. And Britain basically voted to become poorer by leaving the EU. You can blame some of it on money printing at the Bank of England, inflation taking out, you know, and lowering living standards as well. So it's a combination of things.
A combination of things that have toppled two prime ministers in the span of 1 year.
It's been less than 2 months since Boris Johnson gave way to Liz Truss as prime minister, followed by the death of the Queen and a dramatic change in the country's economic outlook. And now, yet another leadership contest that could trigger even more economic and political instability.
And more instability means more people relying on charities, from food banks to keep their stomachs full, and warm rooms where those unable to heat their homes can take refuge in the cold months of winter. The new chancellor has curbed Liz Truss's flagship economic plan of a 2-year cap on energy bills to April next year. And at the end of this month, he's expected to announce a midterm economic policy that could spell out the beginning of another prolonged period of austerity.
Whoever takes over, Boris, Rishi, Mordaunt, who knows, but the outlook continues to be bad, because inflation is still out of control. There's not the money or the government finances to give the public sector further wage rises to match that inflation. Strikes will continue. The fiscal position of the country remains dire, partly because we have a smaller economy because of Brexit. So there's no easy solution. There's no easy way out of this. The hole has been dug, and it's very deep and very difficult to climb out of.
Paying the price of that, ordinary Britons, as the Conservative Party races to choose its third leader and prime minister in 1 year, urgent help to those in need couldn't come any sooner. Saeed Puruza, London.
The so-called dirty bomb allegations are escalating between Russia and Ukraine and its Western allies. Moscow now saying that Kiev has nearly completed building the conventional weapon containing nuclear material.
The provocation pursues a purpose to accuse Russia of using the weapons of mass destruction on the Ukrainian theater of war. It will trigger worldwide a massive anti-Russian campaign aimed to undermine the trust in Moscow.
Nakhrylyov says that Kiev wants to terrify the local population to increase the exodus of refugees and present Russia as a nuclear terrorist. He added that Russian troops are ready to carry out necessary measures in case of radioactive contamination. Now, those comments came after a Russian defense minister, in a flurry of phone calls with his NATO counterparts, warned that Ukraine could stage a provocation with the use of a dirty bomb. Kiev has dismissed the claim as an absurd and dangerous fabrication. France, the UK, and the US have also accused Russia of plotting to use the transparently false allegation, in their words, as a pretext for escalation in Ukraine. Now, senior researcher and political analyst Stanislav Prichin says that Russia's new east-oriented policy on economy and security after being targeted by heavy Western sanctions.
We could see that today Russia is the leader in the world after long period of time when Iran was the leadership, got this leadership with sanctions against Iran from the Western side. So now Russia is the number one country which has the most number of sanctions against Russia. And of course, it has effects on Russian economy. Russia is trying to adapt to new circumstances, new reality. We have some problems in financial relations with our partners. We have problems with the European market because during a long period of time it was the most important market for Russian oil and gas. From my perspective, this is the new age and new opportunities for relations between Russia and Iran, because now we are both in very difficult conditions when we don't have access to international financial market. And in such circumstances, of course, necessity of creation absolutely new financial architecture, infrastructure for trade, for investments to each other, now is extremely demanded. Now we could see that Russia is trying to activate its policy and diplomacy towards the Central Asian countries in security, economy, humanitarian issues.
The United States looks set to have greater influence over the EU as the bloc's leaders are trying to become less dependent on imports from Russia and China. Washington is stepping in to replace Moscow as the EU's major energy supplier, but the associated costs are enormous. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
EU leaders at a summit in Brussels agreed China is becoming too assertive. It's the same phrase they have been using for years with respect to Russia. Iran was also in their sights. New restrictive measures against Tehran were rubber-stamped.
Sanctions have been taken against those who are participating in the repression of peaceful demonstrations. And this, of course, is linked to the support of Russia against Ukraine.
Analysts say the allegations against Iran are spurious and they are being vehemently contested. It's pointed out that the bloc sometimes ignores clear international law violations, even when there's zero ambiguity. For example, those perpetrated by Israel against Palestinians. The US is said to have even greater influence over the EU as the bloc moves to try and isolate Moscow and Beijing. It's suggested that has been Washington's plan all along.
Europe, they are totally dependent on the United States and in energy field and in military field, and that is dependency that doesn't allow them to conduct independent foreign policies.
Sanctions against Russia over the war in Ukraine have driven energy costs to unmanageable levels. A complex package has been agreed in principle by EU leaders to try and lower prices and demand.
There's a lot of work now ahead of us what the energy is concerned, but the roadmap is very clear, and it was good to have this unanimity, this broad support for the roadmap that we have put forward.
Leaders admit the energy package is very complex and will take up to 3 weeks to try and finalise. Will this summit deliver positive results for EU citizens? It's a crucial question for millions of households and businesses, but also a vital political question for the bloc's leaders. Extreme left and extreme right, anti-EU parties are waiting in the wings. Ignoring massive corruption findings by their own financial watchdog, EU leaders have agreed to provide €18 billion to the Ukrainian government in 2023. But that's nothing compared to what they will spend on lethal weapons for the country's army. Jerome Hughes, the EU Leaders Summit, Brussels.
Italy's first female Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni, and her cabinet have been sworn in by President Sergio Mattarella. Meloni's tasked with steering her country out of an economic storm that risks damaging long-term family livelihoods. Max Civilli has a report from Rome.
On Saturday, 45-year-old Giorgia Meloni took an oath as Italy's Prime Minister before President Sergio Mattarella. Meloni, the country's first woman to become premier, is one of the founders and the current leader of the far-right-leaning party Brothers of Italy, the political force that spearheaded a right-wing coalition to victory in last month's general election. Besides bringing some political stability to Italy, which has seen 68 governments in its 74 years of history as a republic, Meloni will have to face a series of daunting challenges, including a looming recession, protecting Italians from surging energy bills, and reassuring the establishment about her Atlanticist and anti-Putin alignment.
Delegates from our coalition met with President Mattarella, and they agreed over the fact that there are many emergencies at national and international level, and quick answers are needed.
Italy's new Prime Minister, Giorgia Meloni, says her government will follow the line of NATO and the Western Alliance. Also, the new Foreign Minister, former European Parliament President Antonio Tajani, repeatedly said he will be fully supportive of Kiev. Meloni's two main allies, media magnate Silvio Berlusconi and Matteo Salvini, are longtime admirers of Russian President Vladimir Putin. Earlier this week, a video portraying Berlusconi saying that Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky should be held accountable for the conflict in Ukraine caused a stir in the political arena. Italians are hoping the new government will work for a peaceful resolution to the conflict in Ukraine.
We must do all we can to stop the war through negotiations and dialogue, and the new government must help Italians to pay energy bills. We are on our knees.
We are confident that the new government will do good. Its biggest challenge will be easing the impact of soaring energy bills on Italians.
Meloni is expected to lay out her political priorities next week when she faces confidence votes at the parliament that will confirm or not that she holds a majority. Max Civilli, Rome.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
in the limelight.
British Prime Minister Liz Truss finally resigned, as experts had predicted her collapse days and even weeks before. Liz Truss's legacy for Britain was a tanking pound, soaring inflation, and a seemingly inevitable recession. World media websites have analyzed this issue and economic challenges that face Britain. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Common Dreams website wrote, "It would take longer to properly account for all the myriad ways Liz Truss leaves Britain worse off than when she entered office, than the amount of time she spent inside number 10. Her brief tenure has been characterized by an exhilarantly rapid pace of record-breaking, from establishing an unprecedented Labour lead in the polls to presiding over the highest rates of inflation in 40 years, to driving the pound down to its lowest ever level against the dollar, and culminating in her resignation as the shortest-serving prime minister in UK history. The story of the Free Enterprise Group, FEG, the neo-Thatcherite Tory faction founded by Liz Truss in 2011 and closely associated with Tufton Street think tanks such as Institute for Economic Affairs, IEA, makes for satisfying Scander fraud. A decade after a gaggle of new elected Tory MPs, among them Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng, co-authored Britannia Unchained, which outlined the FEG's vision for the country. The group's internal politicking saw them slowly ascend to the head of the table. 12 long-time supporters of FEG would occupy cabinet positions in Truss's government, with Kwarteng, Thérèse Coffey and Nadim Zavi rewarded with some of the choices senior roles. The head of IEA's public policy openly and gleefully posted about dictating the political course. At last, it was time for them to realize the hyper-neoliberal Britain they had dreamed about for so long, one which could boast the bare minimum in taxation, regulation and public spending. Their vision promptly dissolved on contact with reality, immediately taking the economy and requiring a humiliating and abrupt halt to the experiment after all of 44 days. Their hubris might make for an enjoyable bit of political theatre, but beyond the spectacle, the consequences of Truss's fleeting premiership cannot be neatly undone. Though the pound began to rally against the dollar almost instantly after her resignation, the damage caused by Trussonomics, which led to a collapse in gilt government prices, have only thrown fuel on the raging fire of the cost of living crisis. Britain is by no means alone in facing such crises, particularly in the wake of various economic and supply chain shocks resulting from the Russia-Ukraine crisis. But economists have begun to refer to the upshot of Truss' response as a moron risk premium, the country becoming a cautionary tale in how to exacerbate an already perilous economic situation. The Bank of England had to pledge that it was prepared to spend up to £5 billion a day over 13 days, in an attempt to prevent various pension funds from going under. It is now expected to raise interest rates from 25 tenths percent to 5% by early 2023, with the Resolution Foundation anticipating that 5 million households could be facing an average mortgage bill increase of £5,100 annually. Many homeowners may be forced to sell up, but since lenders responded to the mini-budget by withdrawing 1,700 products, roughly 40% of the market, before reintroducing 900 of them at far higher prices, eligible buyers might be in much shorter supply. As well as exposing mortgage owners to a much higher risk of defaulting, the bank has already warned of increases in the coming months. This could have a severe short-term effects on renters too, should these rising costs be passed on by landlords. The knock-on effect of a sharp increase in tenants and homeowners being unable to afford rent and mortgages, particularly as other living costs simultaneously soar in tandem, has the potential to not only lead to a large spike in homelessness, but to collapse the property market, a market with which many pension funds are also inextricably linked. There is a potential that interest rates might not be raised in line with market expectations to avoid such a scenario, but this carries a risk of higher inflation, which has already climbed to 10.1% under Truss, the highest in 40 years. Annual food prices have risen by almost 15%, the highest rise since 1980, which has certainly not been helped by the weakening of the pound, leading to significantly increased import costs. The true impact of a spiraling energy cost hasn't been truly felt yet, given British are only in October and winter hasn't really drawn in. Consumers being battered on numerous fronts of essential costs, including housing, fuel, food, are likely to make spending cutbacks, meaning many employers could see a significant downturn in business, which when combined with their own increases in energy and supply costs, might have disastrous consequences for their staff, whether in depressed wages or cutbacks. Losses in earnings beget losses in spending power begets more losses in earnings. Truss's growth plan ostensibly sought to prevent a recession, but looks only to have made one more inevitable and more sharply felt. It would be unfair to lay blame for all of these scenarios squarely at the feet of Liz Truss. She is a symptom rather than a direct cause of current situation, and of an ideology that has for decades been busy organizing the economy in such a precarious way for the benefit of all those she last month sought to hand tax cuts to. In just 44 days, Truss has given the British all of a glimpse of what plus 40-year political project could look like if allowed to be taken to its logical conclusion.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Cultivating an Islamic identity in a postmodern world has been our topic tonight. Last night we began our content by looking at the historical discussion on the implementation of Islam into Mecca and Medina, the purpose of the Prophet, a little bit of the methodology of the Prophet, as I mentioned last night to all of you, The intent was never to come in and destroy all faiths and convert the entire masses, of course, to Islam, but rather to give them an alternative, another path, wings to perhaps succeed. And last night I mentioned that he took on three different approaches when it came to pre-existing or pre-Islamic culture that was already existing in the Arabian Peninsula. We talked about the fact that there were certain norms that he rejected, certain norms that he redirected, certain norms that he accepted. And in doing so, he was simply trying to see how Islam can fit in that culture, better that culture, preserve that Islamic culture. And I said that yesterday, that entire discussion, only for you to understand that the Islamic identity that I'm trying to present to myself and all of you does not necessarily mean that we reject everything else. For example, I find that the hesitation sometimes in my youth today in adopting an Islamic identity is that that means that they have to kind of, you know, distance themselves from these Western roots. As I mentioned last night, there's a lot of beauty in this West. There's a lot of humanity here that can be used to further along the mission of Islam. Of course, not everything, but there are certain things, of course, that can be used. When you have a moment, study the story of Shaitan. It's a very, very interesting story. This was not a jinn who denied God from the beginning. He was, you know, revered by all before Adam came about. Thousands of years he worshipped, to the point where everybody kind of thought that he was a lock to be the Khalifa. It's your job, it's your promotion, Shaitan. And one of the interesting parts of this story was that he was denying the wrong portion of Adam. Listen to me carefully. When you look at the hukam of Allah to do sajda in front of Adam, alayhi salam, when did that hukam come about? In one verse, Allah says, وَإِذَا سَوَيْتُهُ وَنَفَخْتُ فِيهِ مِنْ رُوحِي فَقَعُوا لَهُ سَاجِدِينَ. Do you get? When I made his form, and then I blew into him, min ruhi, from my ruh, from my spirit, Allah's talking, then you become the sajidin. It does not say that when I made his physical form, then become the sajidin. It was never about the physical form. That's a big blunder by Shaitan. When Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gave him the opportunity, now look, I'm giving you a chance to explain yourself. Why didn't you do sajda in multiple areas in the Quran? Why? What stopped you? Ma ma'naka, what stopped you? This is your chance to defend yourself. I'm letting you, as your God, letting you now, because by the way, he believed in God, he believed in the hereafter. He just, something about Adam that just didn't click with him. He would say to Allah, in Bahar al-Anwar, there's a hadith that says, look, you remove this idea of Adam from me, oh, I'll worship you like nobody else. And I always use this example to a lot of my young guys who sit there and ask me, why do I have to worship God the way He wants to be worshipped? He wants 5 times a day of prayer. If ultimately the purpose of prayer is meditation and dhikr and calming the soul, I do that with yoga, I do it with my walks, I do it with meditation, I go out there on sunrise, I am alone. Why can't that be my form of prayer? Why does it have to be fajr and zuhr and qunut and ruku and sujood? And why do I have to fast the way he says in the month of Ramadan? I intermittent fasting all the time. I always do IF, 16, 8, 18, 6, all these different, you know, models I do. Absolutely, I do it all year round. Why do I have to give khums this way? I donate to the center. I help out this orphanage. I always cut a check here and there. I get that question a little bit more than I should nowadays. And the very simple answer is that he's the ma'bud. He's the source of your worship. It's on his terms that we worship him, not on my terms that I worship him. I get this from this hadith, where now he says, remove Adam, I worship you like no other. And Allah responds to him that you don't dictate to me how to worship me. I tell you how to worship me. And this ego of Shaitan got to the point where even Nabi Musa alayhi salam would ask Allah, you know, one thing about Nabi Musa's life, he would ask Allah these very, very interesting questions, I tell you. and thank God for him. Things that you and I would think about, but he would ask. For example, he would ask, can Shaitan still right this wrong? That's a great question after all these years. Is he like, you know, that's it, he's gone? It's a beautiful question he would ask. Another great question he would ask Allah, Allah, if you were a creation, what would you do on earth? That's a great question to ask God. And so he asked Allah, can Shaitan make this right? He goes, yes, he can. Go to the grave of Adam, tell him, and do sajda to the grave, and all will be right. And he didn't do it. He wouldn't go to the grave, saying, look, I didn't do it when he was alive, I'm going to do it now that he's dead. Oh. But the one blunder of many that Shaitan made, he reduced the entire issue between him and Adam to be surat, to be physical. خَلَقْتَنِي مِن نَار وَخَلَقْتُهُ مِن تِين. But it was never about fire and clay. Maybe a portion of it. But look, when you understand a little bit of grammar, you know that إِذَا and fa are very, very joined together. It's like, for example, you know, I can tell Ali Raza, he asked me the first night, do you want these lights out during Masaib? And I said, yes, I do. He's okay, so he knows that when Sayyid Asad starts the Masaib, turn off the lights. So Zuhair has to walk all the way from the back, but Bachada come and he turns off the lights. So if and when. If this happens, then do this. If this happens, then do this. If is the cue, and then of course is the result of the cue. Idha and fa is no different. Idha meaning when this happens. Fa means that you are to do that when the idha happens. Look at where the fa is in this verse. It's very important. A little bit dry, I'm sorry. The fa is important. إِذَا سَوَيْتَهُ وَنَفَخْتُ فِيهِ مِنْ رُوحِي فَقَعُوا لَهُ سَاجِدِينَ. The fa happens right after وَنَفَخْتُ فِيهِ مِنْ رُوحِي. Meaning what made Adam قَابِلِ السَّجْدَ, worthy of worship, wasn't to do with him being clay, but the spirit of God inside of him. Make sense? Which means what? There is an immaterial essence inside of us that absolutely connects back to God. Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, اللهم صل على. He says, Ya Ilahi, kafali izzan an akuna laka abdan. It's enough for me. It's kafi for me. That it's enough for my respect. It's enough for my honor. I don't need anyone else's respect. It's enough for me that I am your slave and abd. Wa kafabi fakhran an takuna li rabban. Allah. And it's enough of a source of pride for me, fakhr for me, that you are my Lord. Don't need to go begging into anybody else. This is who I am. Absolutely. If I want to wear, let's say, for example, abaya everywhere I go to, no frills, that's fine. That's my choice. It's not easy. It happens when harmonization happens. It happens when we look inside of us and discover the eye that sometimes the body and its nafs is looking to bury. That happens sometimes with contemplation.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Adi Alimun Hali حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Thank you. RIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The charter airline that was hired by the British government to remove asylum seekers to Rwanda has pulled out of the scheme following a wave of public pressure in Britain. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. Newspaper The Guardian has more on this story. A charter airline hired to remove people seeking refuge in the United Kingdom to Rwanda has pulled out of the scheme after pressure from campaigners. A plane operated by Privilege Style first attempted to fly asylum seekers to the East African country in June, but was grounded by an 11th-hour ruling by the European Court of Human Rights. The Mallorca-based carrier had become known as the UK government's airline of the last resort for its willingness to conduct deportation flights that other airlines refused. But after an email campaign by torture survivors and refugee organisations, Privilege Style has said it will no longer operate flights to Rwanda. The development will leave the British government in a fix. Two other charter airlines that previously conducted deportation flights, Titan Airways and Air Tanker, have already ruled themselves out of the scheme. In a letter to the charity Freedom from Torture, which has led the campaign under the hashtag #StopTheFlights, Privilege Star said, "It hereby wishes to communicate the following, that it will not operate flights to Rwanda in the future, that it has never flown to Rwanda since the one flight scheduled for June of 2022, which is the reason for this controversy, was suspended." The United Kingdom signed a £120 million deal with the Rwandan government back in April to outsource the UK's asylum system as it sought to find a solution to a growing number of refugees entering the United Kingdom via small boats in the English Channel. The deal meant people who had arrived in the United Kingdom by irregular means, such as by small boat, could be forced onto a charter plane and flown to the East African country of Rwanda. It was criticised by human rights organisations because of Rwanda's record as an authoritarian state that repeatedly imprisons, tortures and murders alleged political opponents. Privilege Style's statement followed an escalation in public protests against it by campaigners. Last week, activists from Freedom from Torture presented the firm with Worst Airline of the Year award at the carrier's headquarters in Palma, Mallorca, in front of the media. According to the carrier, its VIP customers include several Spanish companies and top Spanish football clubs. Campaigners targeted Privilege Style outside the Real Madrid versus Barcelona football match last week in Madrid, holding banners reading, "Don't fly with Privilege Style while they profit from refugees' pain." No flights have taken off yet to Rwanda because of legal challenges in the High Court. On 14th of June, a Privilege Style Boeing 767 was due to take 7 asylum seekers to Kigali in Rwanda from a military airport at Boscombe Down in Wiltshire. The day before, it had taken tourists from Tenerife, Spain, to Dusseldorf in Germany. But the flight, which cost the British taxpayer about £500,000, was cancelled at the last minute, following a decision by the European Court of Human Rights. Liz Truss, the outgoing British Prime Minister, had pledged to continue the scheme. Candidates considering running to be Prime Minister, including Rishi Sunak, Penny Mordaunt and Boris Johnson, are expected to support the deportations. The British newspaper The Daily Mail also has details about the same story. An airline hired by the British government to deport migrants from the United Kingdom to Rwanda has pulled out of the scheme following controversy surrounding it and backlash from human rights campaigners. Privilege Style was due to remove people to Rwanda in June for the first time under the government's new immigration policy. But the flight was grounded at the last minute after intervention by the European Court of Human Rights. The Mallorca-based airline had faced calls and public demonstrations urging it to abandon the arrangement and today confirmed it would not put on any more flights to Rwanda. In a major blow to the British government's policy, the airline has now described the controversy surrounding the episode and pledged to never attempt to fly migrants to Rwanda again. In a statement, the operator said, "It's important for us to clarify that we will never operate the flight to Rwanda since the one scheduled in June of 2022. The reason for this controversy was suspended and never flew. That we don't operate flights to Rwanda in the future." Freedom from Torture, which led the campaign, said it had received a letter from the airline detailing the decision, in which it also asked the charity to now cease actions against our brand. Kolbasia Hasu, who fled torture in Central Africa and now works for the charity, described the news as a victory for people power after activists stood up against the British government's cruel Cash for Humans Rwanda scheme. With Privilege Style pointing out the wheels are coming off the British government's dodgy Rwanda deal. Whoever succeeds Liz Truss as Prime Minister should put an end to this inhumane plan once and for all, he added. Last week, activists stood outside Privilege Airlines headquarters in Palma de Mallorca, with a banner reading Worst Airline Award Winner in both Spanish and English. The withdrawal of the operator, which became known as the government's airline of the last resort, has prompted questions over which airline could be used to operate the government flights, should they go ahead. 2 other charter airlines that previously conducted deportation flights, Titan Airways and Air Tanker, have already ruled themselves out of the scheme. The Home Office said it does not comment on operational matters, but that the government remained committed to the Rwanda policy. The then Home Secretary Priti Patel announced the £120 million deportation deal back in April in a bid to curb channel crossings by people in small boats. Since then, at least 32,300 have made the journey. The legality of the arrangement has been contested in the courts of law, with ministers and campaigners awaiting a ruling from High Court judges on the case. The first flight in June was halted following an 11th-hour intervention by the European Court of Human Rights. The plans has also faced condemnation from public figures, including the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welsby, who said, "Deporting asylum seekers should shame us as a nation." The outgoing Prime Minister Liz Truss had vowed to stand by the plan, as did Rishi Sunak and other candidates who ran to become Conservative Party leader over the summer. So far this year, more than 37,500 migrants have arrived in the United Kingdom after crossing the channel, according to government figures. This includes over 4,500 this month alone. But the Ministry of Defence, the MOD, has not recorded any arrivals in the UK since Tuesday amid poor weather conditions at sea. A Home Office spokesperson said, "We remain committed to our world-leading migration partnership with Rwanda, which will see those who come to the United Kingdom through dangerous, illegal and unnecessary routes relocated to Rwanda to rebuild their lives in that country."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترك همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Faith based on understanding. Saturday, the 4th of Ramadan, 1394, 21st of September, 1974. There is a story about the leaders of one of the communist nations of the Eastern Bloc, who professed atheism and utterly rejected any culture or philosophy that was not based on materialism. This story takes place shortly after the Indian independence. In order to win the hearts of the massed millions of Indians who have just won their independence, these leaders visit India. Some of the most important Muslim leaders were Maulana Shah Mahmud Dehlawi, Maulana Mahmud al-Hassan, Maulana Abul Kalam Azad, Maulana Muhammad Ali, and Maulana Shaukat Ali. The term Maulana amongst Indian Muslims at the time is roughly equivalent to our term Ayatollah. Therefore, these Muslim scholars were amongst the major leaders of the Indian independence movement. There were also Hindu figures such as Mahatma Gandhi, and figures belonging to the Jain faith were also a part of it. Coming back to Tilak, he was a Hindu monk, although perhaps monk is not the proper term, but in any case, he was a Hindu religious leader and an amazing figure. He really was quite a remarkable person, although he died while the struggle was ongoing and did not live to see a free India. However, 30 years, 40 years after his death, his followers saw his vision for a free India realized and wore the Tilak mark to memorialize him. This mark is a religious symbol with spiritual and metaphysical significance. And Tilak himself was, for the Hindus, a religious leader.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
In any case, when these communist leaders who espoused atheism and materialism went to India, in order to win people over to their cause, they put the Tilak mark on their heads. In other words, they wanted to say, yes, us too, we believe the same as you. This, even though their own words and beliefs contradicted this statement. Those political leaders who are removed from spiritual, religious, or divine responsibilities are like this. But the prophets of Allah believed in whatever they spoke with the totality of their being. Whatever they called people towards, they were rushing towards it already. It means nothing if I lay down at the bottom of a mountain, dying of thirst, and tell you there is a cool fresh water to be had on the top of this mountain. Quick, go and get it. Hurry, I'll be waiting here. You would all be right to tell me, if what you're saying is true, if you really knew there was a spring atop this mountain, when you yourself are dying of thirst, you would have gone yourself. You must be lying, for you yourself do not believe what you have said. Therefore, divine leaders must, before anyone else, like trailblazers with the banner in their hands, set out on the path, stand tall and lead the way for others to follow.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.